I mean, I grew up in Southern California, and I mean, our state is on fire again. You know, it's crazy. The state is on fire again. You know, the snowpack gets worse and worse every year. It's more unpredictable. You know, I've been sick. I've seen friends get really sick in the ocean from the irresponsibility of the runoff in local beachside communities and developments. I've been on field trips to the mountains, and I understand what we're doing to these natural habitats. Like, we're still shooting mountain lions that we've been tracking for 20 years, and they just keep falling off because we just feel like this need that they have no right to this natural ecosystem that is Earth. And whenever we feel threatened by what is naturally supposed to do what they're supposed to do, we basically shoot them down. You know, that's why I started Players for the Planet. Hey everybody, this is Chris Dickerson, former Major League outfielder, co-founder of Players for the Planet, and this is The Game Plan.
Hey Tim, how's it going? I was thinking that we've been doing this show now for about 6 months, and you know, we have quite a few conversations off the mic, but we never really get to put them on the show. And especially with everything going on this week and last week and the conversation that we just had with Chris Dickerson, I kind of just wanted to start this week by asking, like, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. There's a lot going on. And I think what's been really challenging, I feel pretty conflicted, especially as it relates to our show. Like, you know, who are we putting this out there for? Like, should we be even talking about the stuff that's going on? I think in this show that we did with Chris, I mean, he couldn't help but share his perspective. And it was really interesting what we get into, which is the parallels between these massive things that are going on and affecting our world, from the light that's being shown on social injustice, obviously the global pandemic. And then I kind of feel like embarrassed and was questioning myself a lot as we were getting into the interview, because I was like, oh shit, I forgot about climate change.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot about this monumental issue. And so it's one of the things, obviously, we dig into a lot with his work and with Players for the Planet. And we also touch on the sensitive issues around just what's going on. I mean, how could we not, with all the players going on strike on Wednesday and Thursday? How are you doing?
Yeah, that's the thing that I think I struggle with the most, which is there are these challenges that feel so insurmountable, and you kind of come to the point where you're like, okay, well, that's the government that's going to deal with it, or you know, somebody else is going to talk about it, and that's not my problem right now. And I think that's the feeling of like feeling numb to these things, and it's just like a daily thing, right? And I think that's exactly what the activists and the folks that are advocating are talking about, which is that you can't allow yourself to get numb. Like, you exacerbate the problem. You actually make it worse by standing still and not talking about it. And the tough thing for us is like, yeah, we are a business show. We're a sports show, and we know why our audience tunes in. But at the same time, like, we are presenting a full picture, and you can't be a full human being. You can't be your full self if you can't share these things and share how it affects you. And so that's one thing that I struggle with a lot, which is like, how do we actually have these conversations, and should we be having these conversations?
Yeah. And I'm hopeful and thankful that our audience can come into this with an open mind and also understand, like, at least for, you know, I'll speak for myself. I don't have it all figured out. I am a white male who's experienced a lot of privilege in his life. And so I don't have answers. I'm trying to educate myself, and I hope that through the access and opportunities that you and I have gotten by being able to talk to our guests, you know, they have the opportunity to talk about whatever they want to talk about, whatever they're doing off the field, whatever's important to them, right? And we just want to bring those conversations to our audience. And going back to the conversation we had with Chris, it goes to show, like, and we've seen this with a lot of our guests, sometimes it's the guests that maybe our audience has never heard of that really has the loudest voice or is making the greatest impact and is willing to share the most. And so I'm really thankful for that and for how open and honest he was with us in this conversation.
And he reminded us that these conversations and these challenges are interconnected, right? And it's not just that climate change is happening separate from the pandemic, separate from social injustice. They're related. And when climate change gets worse, it affects impoverished communities more than, you know, maybe it does the suburbs or something like that. And so that's, I think, where I take a lot of hope, which is that, you know, we are here as a platform to educate. We are here as an opportunity to shine a light on guests like Chris, who are going to have these tough conversations with us, who are going to be open and you know, raw with us about what they're feeling. Because at the end of the day, it is about the complete human. It's not just about the stat line or the fantasy score. These are real individuals with real hopes and real passions. And I just feel very lucky that we get to share it on the show. So without further ado, I would love to get to our conversation with former MLB player and now co-founder of Players for the Planet, Chris Dickerson. We hope you enjoy.
All right, cool, man. So help us understand a little bit about when you started to think about things off the field, what you would do post-baseball.
Man, you know, when I was 17, actually.
Really?
Yeah, man. I started having major knee trouble when I was in high school. It started when I was like 12 or 13. I was already having cartilage deterioration in my at the time was my right knee, and then it eventually accelerated at an abnormal pace in my left knee. So by the time I got to my junior year of high school, I'd already had a fracture. And so the warning was, and A, I just got there just because, you know, going through a growth spurt, playing football, baseball, basketball, soccer, and hockey like consecutively, probably not the best thing when you're in that growth phase. But so I ended up having this fracture, and it ended up, you know, being a lesion which fell out into the what's called the medial condyle of the femur, right into the joint, et cetera, et cetera. I had to have a 6-inch metal screw reattached back. So I spent half my senior year on crutches. And, you know, at that time, it's basically like, if this doesn't work, you're not going to play organized sports. So right then, my mom went to, you know, my mom and dad both went to college. My mom worked in corporate at Nissan. She went to Northeastern for grad school at Boston University. And then this is also a lady that went back at like, you know, 55 years old, and she went and got an international communications degree at Berkeley. So
wow.
If that's not the lady who's going to tell you need to figure out your plan B, then I don't know who else it's going to be. So really, so she was just like, and then that summer, I also, though, it was the first time I did an internship. I did an internship with a PR and a media group. And so I was, you know, crutching into the office every day. And that was like the first time that I understood like the joy. And it was weird just watching. I saw it firsthand, the transformation of Nissan in the 90s, in the mid 90s. And if you guys remember like the Maxima, the 350Z, and like, you know, Mr. K. And it was like just the marketing and the programming and the engagement was like so next level. And I got to see it firsthand. Like I was at all these events. I was in all these, you know, the awesome cars. I was going to races. We were having, you know, these celebrities speak at the headquarters in LA. And, you know, my mom being on the communication side of things, like it was awesome. And I was like, that's what I wanted to do. And to see the relaunch of the 350Z, which was, you know, a car that will forever live in Japanese lore. To see that and to see the actual physical reports of, you know, what the launch looks like, what the sales look like, what the target markets are. I'm like, dude, this is awesome. And then I went to college. I'm like, wow. You know, I was a mediocre high school student. And you're telling me that I get to go to college. I get to study marketing now. I get to study like business. And that's what sent me to the next level. Mm. And then that was something that I like really enjoyed. And I still enjoy to this day. You're not going to catch me reading like Harry Potter. You're probably going to, you know, you're probably going to see me with like, you know, an HBR magazine or, you know, getting to Yes or, yeah, you know, like venture deals or Crossing the Chasm, which I just suggested to a kid that was, you know, kind of like always hung around, you know, would always travel with his parents to some of these minor league teams. And he ended up going to Yale. He just graduated in the spring, and he's wants to get into marketing. That was the first book that I suggested that he read was Crossing the Chasm. But it's something about that. There's strategy and there's empathy that involves that's involved in marketing. Not only who the product applies to, but putting yourself in the position from a need of how it can make your life better from multiple different uses, how it can, you know, either it's the convenience from maybe a health standpoint, from an everyday task standpoint to, you know, whatever the case is, it's identifying these pieces that's so fascinating, but you also have to have a certain amount of empathy to put yourself in that position to see how it can truly help you and knowing where that person is coming from and to devise products to tackle that particular, you know, that particular issue that may be facing that particular demographic. Yeah. So I've always found that to be super interesting. So, you know, my seventh grade yearbook said I wanted to be a professional athlete, which was crazy. My eighth grade yearbook said I wanted to work at Nike. I'm going to be that.
Things change.
I want to be the head of marketing at Nike. So one happened. The other one I'm still working on. So yeah, man, that's my background. It happened because of injury and because, yeah. You know, bless my mom's heart. It was like, you need to find a backup plan. And that watching my mom and try not to like going Chris Webber.
No, it's,
you know, obviously it's like, it's a weird time for everybody. But I think about what Chris Webber said last night and it's weird because he broke down at the same point because he understands the impact that seeing people that look like you, how that influences and how what you want to do. And so I was very fortunate to have my mom, especially in her position, who then took her platform and ran the HBCU summer program to then give more kids that look like me an opportunity to pursue professions in corporate America because they're just so limited as African Americans. And to see what we're going through now and everything that's happened through this pandemic, and again, just a couple of days ago, looking back to see all of the stuff that my mom has been a part of and to see what she has said about how difficult it's been for her to be a Black woman in corporate America.
Yeah. And we appreciate you sharing that. I mean, it is, you know, we're recording this the day after the NBA rightfully decided to speak out and protest the games in light of everything that's going on. Sorry, let me be very clear. It is the players who decided. That's right. It was for the NBA games. And, you know, it is one of those things where Tim and I were texting back and forth last night where we said, you know, these are conversations that aren't happening at the political level because of all the divisiveness. It's not happening at the school and educational level, but it's happening in sports. And it sort of reminds you how much the sports world really does catalyze these conversations. Is that something that you recognized while you were an active player where you were saying that, hey, we have this real power to affect change? Or, you know, is it something that you realized after?
No, I mean, I realized it before it. You know, that's why I started Players for the Planet. I mean, I grew up in Southern California and I mean, our state is on fire again. You know, it's crazy. The state is on fire again. You know, the snowpack gets worse and worse every year. It's more unpredictable. You know, I've been sick. I've seen friends get really sick in the ocean from the irresponsibility of the runoff in local beachside communities and developments. I've been on field trips to the mountains and I understand, you know, what we're doing to these natural habitats. Like we're still shooting mountain lions that we've been tracking for 20 years and they're just keep falling off because we just feel like this need they have no right to this natural ecosystem that is Earth. And whenever we feel threatened by what is naturally supposed to do what they're supposed to do, we basically shoot them down. And especially in Southern California, there's not a whole lot of places that have the biodiversity and just in such a wide spectrum as California. I understood it at an early age, the importance of it. And so, you know, when I got to pro ball, especially when I started this and it just started out as a simple press inquiry, to, I just wanted to just do one thing, and I just wanted to cut down on plastic. That was it. And I sent in a press inquiry. I saw these bottles and I was like, that's, I can make a statement with that. That bottle that says, I am not plastic. If I can get 50 guys to use that as a team, as a collective unit to make a statement, people will listen. And that's exactly what happened. The next thing I knew, ESPN.com and MLB.com picked up the story. I got called up a month and a half later. And again, I was on the computer, you know, probably reading something from Thomas Friedman, and said, the hell are you doing on your computer? You're going to the big leagues. And, you know, then my first home series, I get there and there's, you know, signs all over the stadium with the recycling symbol. And that's when I understand, that's when I understood that I now have the power to understand and to listen to those fans, like what their concerns are. I know that they're afraid, like, you know, the planet is in peril. What can I do better? And to take my knowledge and then to share, and then to take athletes that understand with me that where our planet is going, if we don't make a change, how impactful that can be. And that's how I started Players for the Planet.
Whether it be preserving the planet or a lot of what's being brought to light with social justice, both of those things require a daily effort and lift and call to action. But they're both things that are, they're forever, right? Like they take such great impact, and yet it's the little impacts every day that can help make change. How do you keep the hope and on a daily basis with the things that you're doing for the planet when you see things like what's going on in California right now, you know, with the fires, or just every day there's another tragedy for our planet? And that's the parallel I'm trying to bring with, you know, obviously the tragedies that are happening from a social justice standpoint too. And it's really easy to lose hope. How do you keep the faith?
It's really difficult, you know. It's really tough. I feel like it's honestly to the point where, you remember the Matrix when, I forget the name of the character, but when he was basically trying to get out of the Matrix and he's sitting there and he's like, you know, ignorance is bliss. And he takes a sip of his wine and it's like, sometimes you're just better off not knowing. And the more that I've dived into, the more research I've done, like reading through the climate report was like one of the most depressing things I've ever done. Mm-hmm. Going to World Oceans Week and sitting through a 2-hour documentary on what's happening to the albatross and, you know, how it's just basically been killed off by plastic. And then hearing the world leaders in these agricultural sectors talk about what the state of the oceans and what the state of their fishing markets looks like. Seeing the tension and the despair in the body language and people at the UN, this isn't like a backyard, you know, neighborhood, you know, environmental watch group. These are the brightest minds that in the world, and they're cringing in their seats. So it's difficult to hold your shit together when, you know, you have kids and your friends have kids, and you know, like the world is going to be completely different. They're not going to have what we have. And that's the most disheartening part. Just not only just, you know, having a biracial daughter, not understanding just that part of it, but understanding that a lot of these animals that you love that you see on TV aren't going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking tough talk conversations.
Yeah.
To have with little kids.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to have them.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I was talking to Jay about last night when we had this conversation around sport as a vehicle to teach and to bring awareness when there's nowhere else to turn for awareness from our politicians, not going to call them leaders, because our leaders are athletes right now. And my 4-year-old has gotten just so into these playoffs. You know, he's 4, and like I'm a big basketball fan, so I'm like, but I'm also, I want to be cognizant, like he's 4, I don't want him to feel pressure from me to be like this huge sports fan, whatever. It's like I want him to enjoy it. Obviously I love it that he loves it, And yesterday he kept asking me, he's wearing his Russell Westbrook shirt. He's like,
where are they? Yeah. Why aren't they playing?
Why aren't they playing, Daddy? Because we had watched the games every day before that. And I kept telling him, like, hey, I want to, you know, wait till your younger sister goes to bed. And I had a really hard conversation with him that I know he didn't understand 95% of what I was saying, especially because his attention was somewhere else. But it gave me the opportunity to start having that conversation with him now. And look, I'm white. I'm privileged. I grew up in a very loving household, but we didn't really have these kinds of conversations. I never really learned in school like the history of our country. And just to be able to start having that conversation with my four-year-old and in a context of him being like, well, why isn't the basketball being played? Like, I'm not thankful for what's going on, but I'm thankful for the leaders we have in sport. And so I want to bring this back to Players for the Planet and what you've done, because clearly you, like you said, you got to the big leagues, you saw the recycled signs on these signs, and like you realize, like, I've got this platform now, and you played with some huge household name guys, which you've now brought into the fold for you. And Jay and I were also saying, like, you're one of the first athletes we've had. We've done over 25 episodes now where you've actually like, hey, let me scale this platform. Let me bring in other guys to go do something. Tell us a little bit about that. Help us understand, you know, how you're able to get the attention of teammates, what those conversations were like. You know, you're both had the shared mission on the field, but also right. like you found an opportunity, even though you were five teams and however many, yeah, take us through right. that a little bit.
So it's weird. And we're going to, you know, I know this is like a business podcast. And if we're going to put it in like a context of strategy, it's like, if you're going to advance your product, either vertically or maybe you're going to go horizontally with different product offerings. That's kind of how I approach it. And it happened that way in an unfortunate manner. You know what I'm saying? Is because, you know, what ends up happening is there's so many different buckets of what's happening around the globe. Like, obviously plastic is taking over some of these countries. Like, you've seen what's happening in the Dominican, you see what's happening in the Maldives. And from a climate standpoint, like, the Maldives is literally drowning. You see that every day, you know, every couple weeks, especially in the winter, as, you know, the rainy season moves into Italy and, you know, the floods keep rising. And you see with, like, you know, you see with the natural disasters, but, you know, and it's like, we're not going to get into climate denying, but with the fact of the matter is, like, we have tangible issues that are happening. Like, species are disappearing at an extraordinary rate. Deforestation is happening at an extraordinary rate, which means habitat loss. And again, go back to like all these animals that these kids love. It's like, okay, well, yeah, they live in Brazil, but they're being killed off at an alarming rate. The elephants, there's only 30,000 left on the planet. So what ended up happening is, like, it was just basically like 2008, 2009, like, the word green was just a buzzword. It was just something cool to do. It made you feel good. Just kind of like putting your, you know, your black square on your Instagram. I'm down with the cause. I'm not really about that life, but I understand where everybody's going with it. So it was like, okay, my first is, we use a ton of plastic. That's what I want to attack, because at sports, I see this every day. I've literally sat by a trash can every day and I watch thousands of bottles get thrown in per week. We can solve this by right now, but cutting down on our plastic by using a reusable water bottle. Great. Next, e-waste is the fastest growing waste stream on the planet right now, especially as innovation accelerates. The more devices are being created, the faster new versions come out, the faster we get rid of old ones. The landfills are filling up again at an alarming rate, like so much to where countries are literally like, we're not taking your crap anymore. China's not taking our plastic anymore. They're not taking trash. They're not taking e-waste. They're simply just like dumping it, you know, on the Yangtze River. And, you know, it's having tremendous environmental consequences. So we started this. So we kind of fell into the e-waste program and we did eight of those. And the feeling that I got, it was just such a tremendous, like, when you connect to the community and you can get out with these fans and see the look on their face when they come and drop off a TV that they've had in the basement for like 15 years and their old computer screen, DVD players, to see the look on their face because they simply don't know what to do, to offer them a solution, knowing that it's going to save the planet, that it's not going to end up in your backyard being dumped illegally. You know what I'm saying? So for that, it's like, I love this. And they do too. So I was like, that's another product that we want to offer, is doing these e-waste events. And then kind of that branching that out. And then, you know, this summer we were supposed to do Pittsburgh. We were supposed to do with the Carolina Panthers, Milwaukee Brewers, Seattle Mariners, Kansas City Royals, and the San Diego Padres. With the 7 events that we did from 2009 to 2017, we recycled over 1.5 million pounds that was diverted from landfills. And we were hoping to do that all in one summer. Thanks a lot, COVID. But electronic waste, and then having Brent come on board was a huge thing. Not only because we got to go to the Dominican and get him, you know, get Rob Robinson Cano and Nelson Cruz, who are the biggest names, to understand, for them to participate and bring attention to the problem. And then the fallout that ended up happening is when you talk to these other guys, like in Edwin Encarnacion, and they understand that there's a problem, and they've been asking themselves like how they can help and what they can do and what the solution is, makes you want to just keep going. And that's been an awesome revelation, what's happened with having Nelson and Robbie on board and having Ahmed Rosario and having, you know, these dozen or so guys that have come out for all these cleanups, is to bring attention to ocean plastic and then the e-waste and then ecology, and teaching young kids about the importance of trees and why we can go out and take, you know, an hour of our day to go plant 2 trees, the, you know, what the ROI as human beings, you know, is for trees. Like they reduce temperatures, they, you know, they filter out particulates, they absorb carbon emissions, especially in high, you know, high emission places like New York, like LA. They're so important. So, you know, that's another one. And then just like, you know, it's the unfortunate matter that this generation has, you know, gone from this buzzword of being green to where these kids now are coming out of college after studying environmental science, and they know, and just to see just within the last 5 years, the alarms that are going off, was like, I need to commit to this. And then to reach out to, you know, Players for the Planet and be like, hey, how can I help? Like, I'm passionate about this. I'm passionate about sustainable building. I'm passionate about sustainable design. I'm passionate about food waste and being a vegan and reducing my carbon footprint. That is what the biggest thing I've noticed. And everybody has their own concern. And that's how we've been able to branch out and do these different things. And so then it was when we redid the site, it was like, we have enough guys that have really genuine interest in sustainable gardening, in organic, you know, going vegan and growing their own vegetables, the importance of composting, the importance of urban ecology and revamping urban spaces into natural living spaces, the value that they have on inner city communities when you put in this natural investment into these communities, how it grows, not only because obviously environmental education is all intersectional with, you know, environmental justice. It all ties into each other because these marginalized communities are the ones that are going to be at most risk with climate change and with some of these, you know, these issues that we're having with carbon emissions and, you know, coal plants, you know, electric plants, you know, oil refineries. A lot of these marginalized communities are all surrounding these places. So the more people we can reach out to these different communities through these different initiatives, the better off and the more educated that these people will be able to stand up for themselves when these companies come in and offer them cheap jobs at these, you know, recycling plants to go through and, you know, it's like, go shove it up your ass. So,
yeah.
So that's been great. And, you know, ocean conversation, you know, so having these different buckets that we can really start to push the conversation, you know, that are attached to some, you know, really important figures in, you know, the sporting community. And we're just looking forward to, you know, having these guys really speak up, but to really, you know, just, you know, grab at these different guys that, you know, that are on their teams and that can you, that they can then bring in, just as I did with Nelson and Robbie, and be like, listen, and then bringing down, you know, like Shane Green, and bringing down Brent Suter to the Dominican, and like watching the look on their faces when they see this issue firsthand, up close and personal. And I just, something that I'll never forget. I will never forget the look on Brent's face when he saw Playa Montesinos the first time.
Yeah.
And the foot tall of plastic that was, you know, washing up. And so that's what we're trying to create. We want to extend the voice to players to particular areas that they're passionate about, and then having Players for the Planet support that cause in any way, shape, or form.
I like that idea that you addressed, that there are so many different aspects to this fight, and there are so many different channels. You know, you all the different sort of aspects you covered around just plastics on one end, around e-waste, around, you know, coal fire and sustainable energy. And I feel like sometimes for folks that want to get involved, millennials or, you know, young people that want to get involved in environmental justice, it's such a big topic. And sometimes you think, okay, this has to be handled on a governmental level. What can I as an individual do? So help us understand that, like, what are those misconceptions that the average person has about what they can do?
That's the single biggest misconception. Hmm. And I literally just wrote this in something. Oh, I was, you know, we're putting together, fingers crossed, you know, just talking with Eric Disler at Nike, who runs a sustainability program. And we've done a deck for a zero waste field that we pitched to MLB. It would be completely, you know, zero waste. I mean, like, no water used, no natural resources, be turf that basically made of recycled materials. The dugouts would be, you know, old shipping containers. Every participant in the Little League gets reusable water bottle. It's a plastic free area. There will be accessible water refillable stations, you know, involved, solar panels to take the grid, but then to extend outside that particular playing space into the local community to take the burden off those. So that's what we're talking about, is like reinventing and innovating safe spaces in these inner city communities, but also promoting environmental responsibility as an educational center. I totally forgot where I was going, but in this deck, I was like, to address the problem is that, to address the question, what can I do? Like, what can one person do? And every person, they have the right, because it's a daunting challenge. It really is. It's a daunting challenge. But for every person that you can basically just reach out to and be like, hey, this is why you should do this. You're not gonna get to everybody, but you will get to somebody, and that person will then go to that next person. That person will change their behaviors. And if that person can reach out in a sensible manner, you know, it's not like the vegans who like shame you. Oh, you eat meat. Oh my God, you eat ice cream, you monster. It's like, listen, you know, you better move off. Hey, you know, here's a solution. Instead of going to the supermarket, like, here, there's reusable produce bags. Here's the link. This is how it works. Oh, awesome. And I just sent this in, and I think that's it. I literally just sent this to a kid. He reached out. He was like, hey, I recycle. I try to get my friends to do X, Y, and Z. And I just want to know, how can I do more? And like, it was like one of those moments, like, this is how this should happen. This is what you can do better. You know, here's a great company that does reusable produce bags, so you don't have to use those plastic bags. Get yourself a reusable water bottle. Get yourself a Brita water filter, so you're not buying water at the house. You can utilize your reusable water bottle. You can, you know, bring, you know, you can have like mini solar panels that you can provide, you know, localized power to different, you know, certain lamps or window side electronics. So you're not using power. It's small things like that that can make a tremendous difference. And they're simple solutions. Be like, hey, here's a really great company. Hey, Generation Conscious. They don't use plastic. They make amazing body wash, so you never have to purchase another plastic bottle or another toothpaste. Or here's a great toothbrush company that doesn't use plastic, and you can simply just send it away, and they'll bring you, you know, they'll send five new ones or whatever. So there's solutions, and you don't have to be judgy, but there's enough people and enough companies that get it to where you can make basic suggestions. And through that, then you are understanding the cycle of like, hey, I understand the value in this. You should try it. Hey, thank you. I've reduced my power. My power bill is $30 cheaper. And once they understand the results in somebody, that's how you create really real change, is when you can offer this in a helpful response, and they can experience the benefits of being zero waste or being environmentally as possible.
Yeah.
You said, you know, even a little bit can make a difference, and you're working with players that are household names, guys that have made tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, and then also guys that maybe we're not as familiar with. You're working with active players, you're working with retired players. How do you create, how do you, with Players for the Planet, allow those players to plug in, and to what level do you have like a certain demand of them if they are going to engage? Because yes, like you'd love to have a big name guy get involved, and like, that's great. And I'm sure there's always like a lot of energy at the very beginning of the relationship. Yeah. But I'm also sure there's times when big name or not, like guys kind of like, sorry, man. Or maybe they don't even say sorry, right? Maybe you just don't hear from them again. Like, how do you manage that with the players being a key driver?
Yeah. It got to the point where when we revamped the whole organization of Players for the Planet, is like, okay, whoever comes on board, I'm going to let them choose how involved they want to be. And so we have basically our ambassadorship program is now broken into three levels. Local, hey, if I call the Milwaukee Brewers, we have an e-waste event, you'll show up, you know, you'll show up, you'll be there, you'll hang out, meet and greet, you'll help, you know, take the TVs from, you know, the people that come up. That's, you know, we'll keep it there. Then you have like national, you know, we're releasing a huge campaign with, you know, with the Nature Conservancy. And that's where you get like the Hunter Pence level, who's like, hey, I've partnered with, I'm going to utilize my social channels to promote, you know, whatever they're doing, because I believe in what they're doing. That's how I'm going to get involved. And then you have like our global ambassadors, like a Brent Suter, like a Nelson Cruz, who's going to come down to the Dominican, who's going to come down to, you know, Puerto Rico. They're going to travel to, you know, they're going to travel to Florida to go out with, you know, for ocean and go actually pick up, you know, go out onto the vessels to see the problem themselves and to, you know, help pull this ocean, you know, out of, you know, straight out of the ocean. So that's who I want. And the weird thing is like, I'm glad you asked that question, because I never wanted this to be like just the names, you know, just like the names or the celebrity attached to it. I never felt comfortable with having these guys involved if they weren't going to be living that lifestyle, which is why I've always had access to NBA guys, but that life, you know, those guys are not about, it's like, it's their lifestyle is completely different. That just didn't suit. I wouldn't be comfortable having them, you know, roll out in a, you know, a G-Wagon that's using 13 miles to the gallon, and they're running power on a 8,500 square foot home, you know, using, you know, keeping it 65 with no,
maybe,
you know,
second
sustainable
home.
Technology. Yeah, maybe second home.
Yeah, it's really tough because you got to live it.
Yeah, you have to live it. And that's been the best part about with these new kids that have come on board. It's like the Mitchell Kilkennys who studied at Texas A&M, you know, who's, you know, sustainable agriculture. You know, Brent, who studied environmental science at Harvard, who, you know, he's all about composting and going into these urban communities and making, you know, making tree deposits, making urban gardens for accessibility to fresh fruits and vegetables for these inner city communities. It's those are the guys that we want. It's the Blake Trahans who have an enormous garden in the back, and they're basically like living off the land, showing the benefits of, you know, of what that work, the work that goes into that, and the rewards that you get from, you know, understanding how important composting and living that lifestyle is. So,
I mean, in a similar vein, there's a lot of organizations out there that are focused on protecting the planet and saving the environment, but you're also a competitor by profession from your baseball days. Like, tell us a little bit about that dynamic. You know, is everyone trying to be collaborative because it's the same cause, or are there times where you're like, yeah, you know, maybe those folks or that group isn't really on the same page as us. That's okay. Like, we'll do our thing. Like, You know, is there anything to any of that?
We've had those conversations, and it's strange. And it all ties back. They're just, you know, that's why we say everything is intersectional. You know, environmental justice is social justice almost, when I'm, you know, because the same issues that, you know, Black people are having in these communities, they're also at risk of these environmental issues as well. So it's like, I just talked about what the Players Alliance is doing, you know, in wake of everything that's happening, and how are we addressing this issue? And then you have, you know, like the Players Coalition that is ultimately doing the same thing, but it, you know, that's Anquan Boldin and Chris Archer and other athletes. And then you have the 150 Black athletes. It's like, we're doing the same thing, but why aren't we doing it under the same banner? Because, you know, they're like, okay, voter suppression, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, okay. So it's like that weird thing. It's like, why aren't we mending, but you should be with us, but you shouldn't. It's weird. And it's kind of the same thing. You know, we had one of these experiences with a group called Eco Athletes. And it's like, okay, we know all the same guys. You've interviewed the same guys that are my guys, and my guys, we're trying to get your guys to tie in two player under one banner. Why can't we be just under one banner? It's like, it's weird when it gets to that. It's like,
yeah,
everybody wants to fight the same problem, but everybody wants their individual clout, knowing that they created this. And it's like, okay, what's the mess? Well, we're a lobbying group. We want to educate and use, you know, our platform to help, you know, educate and help them speak on climate change and this and that. It's like, okay, great. You already know what we're doing. So why not just combine this into, you know, and get the athletes that you've already talked to from hockey, from baseball, from, you know, rowing, skiing, winter sports, and just all just go under one banner. So,
yeah. Where do brands play into that? Because, you know, we've seen this new wave, especially the new sort of direct-to-consumer brands that are all talking about working towards zero waste, or, you know, talking about, oh, we're sustainable becomes the big word. Like, what does that actually mean? Nobody really knows, but it's, you know, they're billing themselves as sustainable. How much of this is actually moving the conversation in the right direction, and how much of it is like greenwashing for branding? And do they reach out to you to sort of partner and try to do more?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of greenwashing. But when you come down to it, and it's, you know, it's like we've been, you know, talking in basically kind of researching what Nike is doing. They're always getting called out for something. But you know how it is. It's like when you're that big, you're always going to be in the bullseye. You're always going to be in the crosshairs of somebody. Same with Amazon. You know, you can accuse Amazon of just greenwashing. Okay, cool. Like, this isn't really our project, but we have so much money that naming rights to Climate Pledge Arena isn't whatever. Cool. We'll take that as part of our climate pledge. But, you know, the fact of the matter is they've used more natural resources than anybody on the planet. With the amount of fossil fuels that they have, the sheer volume of transmissions and deliveries, the impact that they have on the environment is insane.
Yeah.
And so I know they've made a commitment to, you know, 1500 of the Rivian vehicles or the electric vehicles. Okay, that's great. But I don't think we truly understand the size and the sheer size of that operation. So it's important to understand, you know, how these brands work and what they're, you know, and it's whether it's like, okay, we're going to ship through, you know, we're going to offset. And just like you said, we got to the, you know, carbon offset. Hey, we're doing this program. Okay. And we're then offsetting all of our carbon for every shipment. We're going to donate a portion to, you know, to this particular group that's going to plant trees, and it's going to then reabsorb our carbon footprint. You know, we use our materials made of sustainable 100% blah, 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 blah. Okay. Prove it. And this is, it's all about transparency. And this is, you know, this is still a result that is going to is all a great, you know, fallout from, you know, the whole Enron thing. Is like, this is a whole new thing on corporate transparency and kind of opening up to see exactly what you, if you are living up to your, you know, your claims. And so, And that's just going to get more, become more apparent as we move forward, especially in this age of climate peril, that when you say something and you're going to have a large scale kind of environmental action, that it's going to be tracked and it's going to be looked into by somebody, whether it's the NRDC or whether it's a nature conservancy, or whether, you know, there are in fact agencies that do look into, especially on the manufacturing, that, you know, whether it's clothing or retail or consumer industry, to kind of really evaluate and hold these companies accountable, that they are living up to their claims. And I think that's where we're going. If not, we might already be there.
Yeah.
So I know one of our partners, Pistol Lake, who did our shirts, and, you know, 11 bottles, to see that manufacturing process and literally to see the 11 bottles, picking up the 11 bottles and then being able to send that back, knowing that I know exactly what that process is. And it goes here, it's made into yarn here, it's made into here, this is done. We do it at a zero waste facility that uses 40% less, you know, water because we have solar plant. Like, that makes me feel good. And it's important to be transparent about that, you know, to show that process. Because not only is it like actually really interesting if you're a super nerd, but it makes the consumer feel a lot better. And when you make customers feel good about those claims, that consumer loyalty to that brand rises exponentially, and you also increase your brand equity, you know, tenfold.
Yeah. And people, I think, especially in today where there is so much information out there, I think it's not just about, like, folks, I think, are a lot more skeptical when brands make claims. I think we used to be, at least growing up, I remember you would see somebody say something. I think now the amount of literature that's out there and necessary to convince somebody that you are doing what you say you're doing is so important. And I think, you know, it's the right direction overall.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if you were, you know, if you were to look at what Nike is doing with their zero waste, I mean, their move to zero, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, and measuring that, like, when they come out and they do that whole announcement, like, okay, we're all going to get together, Microsoft, Nike, you know, P&G, this is what we're going to do. Okay, show us. And then having that literature, just like you said, available, and be like, okay, we're playing on, you know, this Alpha NXT shoe is made of 50% recycled. Okay, prove it. Well, when they started the Flyknit shoe, it does use 60% less because they could basically net the shoe to, you know, to that foot's demand without the excess material. That excess material has now been rewoven into another shoe. And, like, you know, we have this Nike grind program, that rubber is now moved in it. So you're seeing, like, oh, wow, that's really dope. And it's really dope. And just, you can see it in how it's made. It's no different than what SC Johnson is doing with the Brewers and taking those cups, utilizing those cups into scrub and bubbles, but also using the ocean plastic, the ocean certified plastic, that you can literally see in a tangible handheld result, is that you can see the specks of old recycled plastic that may be red and blue from other plastic containers. So that, it's really exciting, and that you'll notice that same characteristic in a lot of the Nike move to zero products. It's like, wait, how do I get blue, green? And, like, that was definitely from some other shoe.
Chris, is that an initiative that you with Players for the Planet have been a part of, or it's just something you're aware of given your connections to?
No, we're really trying. Yeah, we're trying to, and I think it's part of the, is really making an innovative platform for how we build youth fields. But also, just like, it's important to, when you have these platforms, it's, innovation comes from stepping outside the box and being able to reapply certain technologies and certain manufacturing components, and being able to show, like, the variance and how they can be applied to something. So if you were to have Parlay, what they did with the field in Miami, a full football field made of approximately 1.8 million plastic bottles. Like, that's a tremendous feat. Like, they have set the bar to show you what's possible from sport and the environment and closing the loop on waste. And so taking that and basically, you know, and going to see how can we bake a championship field that is made of recycled and closing the loop on waste, to where we can then, you know, find these innovative ways to create little aspects like that, like using the Nike grind program to provide the turf, the recycled poly that they've been using for the NBA jerseys for the last 10 years, and doing the batting cage nets. out of that. And then how can we educate the kids that are wearing that? Like they're literally wearing their, you know, they might be wearing their plastic bottles through this Move to Zero program, just like they're may be moving, you know, wearing their plastic bottles or the stadium's plastic waste that has now been sewn in and factored into the jerseys that are being worn on the field. Like that is ultimately closing the waste. And that's innovation from, you know, from waste to fan to now expressing and representing that on the field, that entire philosophy of waste reduction. And that's what we want. That's what we want to do at Players for the Planet.
That's what's so exciting and so promising about the things you're working on is not only are like these new solutions being created that make use of all this waste, but it's actually in a lot of cases, it can be an even better solution. And that's when you make the choice for the consumer easy, right? Because you're like, oh, it's an added benefit. You know, it's better than the alternative and it's doing great for the planet. So it's really exciting to see where technology is going and how groups like yours are trying to bring awareness to this. We could, I think, stay with you all day, but we don't want to take up too much more of your time. So we'll switch gears a little bit. We just have a few questions that we always like to wrap on. One of the things that we always like to ask our guests is, what's a lesson from your playing career that has really helped you the most off the field as you've now transitioned into what you're doing now?
I think it's just it's having a plan. Like every day you're going to have a plan. Like you're literally going to have a game plan, especially baseball. You play, you know, 190 games, you know, with spring training, maybe playoffs, but every day you're going to get up and you're going to think to yourself, okay, what did I do wrong yesterday? What steps do I need to take to get better at that particular part of my game or whatever it is? And then look, going into the game is understanding what to expect in that particular day, what to expect in that particular. So it's no different. Like to be well-versed is the same as getting up and researching, you know, what's happening in, you know, with plastic, what's happening, what are the, you know, affordable technologies that can then be tied into some of our initiatives. Like it's important to always stay educated, just as I would go in and I would, the first thing I do when I get to the field is bring up the pitcher that's throwing that night, to bring up the bullpen, to see what they're throwing, how they're pitching, and then to basically sit there in my locker and go through our information packet. So I'm well prepared and I'm educated and I'm knowledgeable about what's going to be happening and then making the adjustments accordingly. So I think that's the biggest thing is like, what is your preparation for that day? And the other thing is like, how great do you want to be? Like, how great do you want to be? You know, how good do you want to be? What else can you get better at today? Like how much better? And it's funny because like that Nike commercial that just came out is just like, it's so simple, but it's so hard for people to understand. Like just be better. Like what did I do? Admitting your faults, knowing your weaknesses and asking yourself, how can I get better every single day? Like the first day, first thing you roll out, like how, what aspect of my life can I get better at? And I think that's what it is. It's like, what every season, what can I get better at? Okay. How hard are you willing to work to do that? Like what the effort level is. And I think that's what sports taught me, especially baseball, because there's no sport that beats you up mentally more than baseball.
Yeah.
That's that Mamba mentality.
There's no sport on this planet that you're going to be a hall. Even if you fail 70% of the time, you're an elite. You're an elite athlete. You're an elite player. If you fail 70% of the time, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame just by failing.
Those are venture capital numbers. I mean,
right. 7 out of 10 times you're going to fail and that makes you elite. So getting over failure and understanding those adjustments that you have to make, not just at like game to game, not just pitch, you know, at bat to at bat, but it's the truly great ones make it pitch to pitch.
Yep.
And that means communicating with your employees, because not everybody's going to be different. That's how you learn true management skills, is understanding the different personalities, what conditions they work best in, how to speak with certain individuals. And that's how you build a team. It's not just being on the field. I don't think people understand that. Is it's not just being a team. Is not just being on the field and just about performance, but how you approach different teammates from different backgrounds, how they react emotionally. Like, I know he's wired already. I know he plays, but I don't need to get on him. I know he holds himself accountable, that I don't need to call him out in, you know, in person in front of everybody, because I know that's not how he responds. But that particular guy, I do know if I take him aside and I put an arm around him and we're like, listen, you got to do better. And that guy under that is so important to him. That increases his performance and his livelihood by tenfold.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting thing about understanding that, from how to transfer these valuable lessons learned in sports into business.
Yeah. Love that aspect of it. Love the internet, you know, the interpersonal aspect of it. And we've also just really enjoyed being able to educate ourselves today on all the things that you're doing. So where I want to close is, how can our listeners get involved with Players for the Planet and do their part? And maybe what are some resources that you would recommend they get, you know, educated on and reach out for?
Yeah, I mean, first off, go visit us at playersfortheplanet.org, you know, playersfortheplanet.org. You know, we just put up our new campaign with SC Johnson and the Milwaukee Brewers, and we're really excited about that. And then donating the $2,000 for the Save the Oceans program for every save that the Brewers get this year. But, you know, that's the best thing, is like learning, like looking at that program and understanding what the impact of your plastic use is, and not being, you know, not understanding where it goes, the importance of recycling, the importance of just reducing your footprint, because, you know, don't approach it as out of sight, out of mind. Take the extra minute to be conscious of, like, where does this go? You know, what was the process of making this? Like, was this, you know, what's the resources that went into making this? And can I find another alternative that's more environmentally responsible that can ultimately do the same thing? And I think there's just so many things. Can I walk to the, you know, can I walk here? Can I bike here? Do I really have to take the car? You know, do I have to take the car to this certain place? So, visit Player for the Planet, both on Twitter, Instagram. We just put up a really cool thing on e-waste. So getting people to understand the impact of when they throw out their, you know, especially if they have old electronics lying around, go seek out eSeward's recycling thing. Take your old TV, take your old cell phones, your old DVD players, because nobody uses those anymore because everything is streaming. Like, I just saw a cable box lying out by the trash can the other day, because they know they can't just throw it in regular trash. But it's those types of things. Like, go find your local e-waste, because it's a huge problem right now. Yeah. As you guys know, it's everything. There's always a new gadget that's coming out, and there's always a new gadget that's ending up in a waste bin, in a trash can. You know, you see the box TVs and flat screens just sitting out on the curb, like.
Yeah, yeah.
People using those stimulus checks to buy new TVs and just throw them out on the lawn.
That's right.
Well, Chris, to echo Jay, thanks again for joining us. You've given us so much to hopefully not just think about, but actually act upon. And, you know, big reason we started the game plan was to educate an audience, but really for Jay and I, just to educate ourselves. And with what you've shared today, both on what you're doing for the environment and your perspective as well on everything that's going on in this world, thank you for just being so open and genuine with us and giving us your time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, guys, I appreciate it. Yeah, let's do it again soon. But thank you for having me on. This was awesome.
Would love to. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. Love it or hate it, it's time for another partner rundown. Jay, it's become clear recently that sport is a powerful way to learn and educate. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, Tim, this week and last week, more than most, I think we recognize the power that sports has to shape our public discourse. And I think one of the biggest reasons for that is that it's one of the last few places that people of different backgrounds still congregate to watch a shared experience. Thanks to digital media, social media, we can go and seek out the narratives that we want to seek out. We can go out and seek out the news that we want to seek out. But when we get together and we watch sports, it's a shared thing. And the athletes, I think, themselves recognize the power that they have to shape that narrative and shape that conversation. So look, one, dating back to Muhammad Ali talking about racial justice issues, to Colin Kaepernick bringing up issues of police brutality, to now players that are speaking out when they walked out of the NBA games last week, it is important for us to recognize that these players are harnessing their power and they are saying, this is our experience and we're going to talk about it with you here today.
Yeah, and look, I don't think you can talk about sport as a platform without acknowledging the fact that the NBA is leading this. And the reason the NBA is leading this is because the majority of their players are Black. And so they've really been forced into this situation. This has been forced upon them largely because, just from a human level, it's something they've faced their entire lives, but also because people are looking to them. People are looking for leaders right now. And unfortunately, there's just not a lot of places for that. But I'm really thankful that we have the leadership in the NBA and in these other leagues that we do have to tap into the minds of people who may not see things equally, right? Or see things from a justice standpoint. And so to be able to get the perspective of these players and understand that they're saying, hey, without these jerseys on and without people knowing my face, I'm facing this stuff every single day. And that's really powerful. And that's the power of sport.
Yeah, very, very much so. And we see that athletes have these immense platforms to speak out on public interest issues. But how can charity and advocacy organizations get the most out of their athlete or celebrity partner?
Yeah, this is a tricky one, because I think as it relates to charity, it's for any human, it's easy to get excited about these things and want to help and figure out a way to participate. And for athletes especially, they've got a lot of things that are demanding of their time. First and foremost, their craft, but then also media availability, people around them. So it's tricky. The way we talked to Chris Dickerson about this, and he talked about really just being an open platform to allow athletes to participate in whatever level that they could. And so if that's a big name athlete who maybe doesn't have as much time, how can we use his platform as a lever to promote the climate change initiatives that we're going after? So I think you got to look at it on an athlete by athlete basis and kind of take what you can get, and then also try to put in place ways that they could maybe be more accountable to the things that they've committed to early on.
Yeah. And one of the things that we talk about on the show a lot, Tim, is that athletes are becoming bigger brands than the teams and brands that they play for and represent. And that's such a powerful thing, because I mean, think about when Cliff Avril came on the show and he talked about how bringing a Super Bowl to Seattle means that, you know, the city of Seattle, the people of Seattle show up whenever he does a philanthropy event, and they show up for him and they donate and they care about the causes that he cares about. And so if you are a charity or brand, and look, when Matt Stover came on, he talked about the hundreds of athlete-driven philanthropies and charities that are trying to do really good work. I think as a charity or brand, what you can realize is that matchmaking aspect is so important, is really spending the time up front and just saying, I don't want just the biggest name in my city. That doesn't necessarily always bring me the best value in terms of a partnership, but finding somebody who I know really cares about this topic, is going to be really engaged, spending that time up front is actually going to make for a better relationship and hopefully a better outcome for your philanthropy in the future.
So you brought up in our show with Chris Dickerson the role brands play as it comes to sustainability. Do you think what brands are doing is enough?
Tim, it's hard not to feel cynical when you see some of these brands and they greenwash themselves effectively by putting these words out like eco-friendly and sustainable. And the problem is these words don't necessarily have any sort of legal definition. So what you call sustainable, I might say is something different, or I might have a higher threshold of expectation for what makes something sustainable. And you can think about, you know, the number of large brands, whether it's a P&G or an Amazon or any of these folks that are committing millions of dollars towards sustainability and then applying it to something like naming rights. And you're like, okay, well, how is that actually helping the environment and helping the cause that you're talking about? So no, I think there are folks that are doing really good work, but on the whole, I think we're still in the phase today where it's a lot more greenwashing than not.
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a good point that these companies could be doing more, but I'm definitely in the camp as it relates to climate change that any progress is positive progress. You have to think about the history of where these companies, especially CPGs, are coming from, and they've always tried to put the purchase interests of their customers first. And so for a lot of reasons, that means convenience comes first. And so what's convenient? Single-use plastic's convenient, whether it's for your soap or your shampoo or going to the convenience store and picking up a soda and then being able to recycle the bottle. So I actually think the onus falls way more on the consumer here to demand with their wallets, to demand with their voices, more change from the brands that they know and love. And if those brands aren't going to make the change, then us as consumers need to seek out alternatives that are going to have a bigger impact on the planet.
I think that's a fair point, Tim. And you know, one of the things I know that you've been grappling with this week is around this idea of Nike's Mamba Week and their jersey and shoe release. So tell me, was that a touching tribute or more of just fueling the hype machine?
Well, let's start off by acknowledging that this started with all of the best intentions. And the relationship between Kobe and Nike is a deep, deep rooted relationship. If any brand was positioned well to do a tribute to him and everything he stood for, it was Nike. And in a lot of ways, they did an excellent job with the content they put out there, the $1 million donation that they made to his foundation. However, what really struck me and a lot of customers that was so frustrating is the fact that they made this a limited release. So here you had thousands, if not millions of fans that were wanting to participate in Kobe's legacy by literally purchasing, spending hundreds of dollars on Nike product, and they didn't even get that opportunity. So I know Nike's got to be thinking about this. I really hope that in the future, when they do this kind of thing, they're going to make it possible for everyone to participate, because it's a really sensitive and personal issue for a lot of customers.
This is not the first time that we've seen brands sort of step in it when they are trying to get involved in a tribute or a large cause. I mean, I'm just thinking back to my NFL days where October is, you know, pink jersey month and November is camo jersey month. And you sort of realize that, like, these organizations that, you know, you're branding yourself with aren't necessarily always doing as much as you would hope for the constituency that they claim to represent. And it's sort of this whole thing around, like, the commercialization of every aspect of sports, and brands play a big part in that. Look, understand that there is monetization to be had here. Understand that the money that they make does ultimately go back to the players and does ultimately go back to the teams. But for consumers, it can feel really cynical when you take something that is as touching as a great ad, a beautiful tribute. I mean, Kobe was a part of their family for so many years. And so in a way, it does feel like a really beautiful tribute to a family member. But then you overshadow it and you do something that really cheapens that by creating a limited hype-fueled drop. And it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth at the end of the day.
Well, Jay, I always appreciate your perspective, especially when you're able to shine a light on some of your own experiences, like what it was like for you when you worked at the NFL. I enjoyed this partner rundown, and I'll see you next week.
Sounds good, Tim.
So that's it for this week's episode of The Game Plan with Jay Kapoor and Tim Kott. Thank you so much for listening. We do have a few shout outs before you go. Thank you to our guest, Mr. Chris Dickerson of Players for the Planet, for sharing his time, energy, and perspective. If you liked what Chris had to say, please make sure to follow him and Players for the Planet across social media. We also want to thank our friend David Simmons, who helped make this interview possible by connecting us to Chris. And last but not least, special thanks to our editor, Will Richardson, who, as always, did a great job getting this podcast ready for your ears. If you made it this far, you must really like the show. We'd love it if you could follow us on Twitter at The Game Plan Show and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We'll see you next week on The Game Plan.